is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine crisis. The new chancellor of Germany comes to Washington, a joint press conference with the president of the United States. In the course of quick questions and answers from the media in German and in English, the chancellor of Germany, in office weeks, answered one question surprisingly in English. He was asked, are you and the United States working together, Nord Stream 2 being a point of contention? Herr Schulz answered, in English, we are acting together, we are absolutely united, and we will not be taking any steps. We will do the same steps, and they will be very, very hard to Russia, and they should understand, said the Chancellor of Germany. I welcome Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, writing most recently about Ukraine crisis and how different capitals are using it for different means and ends. We begin with the capital of Berlin and Chancellor Schulz in his trip to Washington. Gregory, a very good evening to you. Once upon a time, Olaf Scholz and his party, the Socialists, were associated with Ostpolitik. This reaches back to the Cold War. Right now, is Ostpolitik in evidence, and is it useful to Germany? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, yes, Ostpolitik is still the driving tenet, if you like, of the SDP government of Germany, as it was in the old days and as it was during the rule of Chancellor Schroeder until about 2005. So basically, Germany depends on seeking a rapprochement with Moscow. It has achieved that. It has now got the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which the United States keeps threatening to disrupt. Not only by punishing Moscow, but de facto punishing Germany and the German leaders. So Olaf Scholz, the new chancellor of Germany, has to be very careful about how he juggles this. So he has to appear to be a strong member of NATO, a strong supporter of the United States, while attempting to balance that with his relations with Russia, because Russia is now the critical energy supplier to Germany. So the reality is that although there was this appearance of unity between President Biden in Washington and Chancellor Scholz from Germany, the reality is that this drove a wedge further into that relationship. Germany is now extremely angry with the United States for raising this issue. And although Germany said it would not step aside from, quote, punishing Russia if it went to war over Ukraine, you'll note that the German government, the new German government, has not offered any support to Ukraine in pursuing a war with Russia. Quite the contrary. Germany, in fact, has now benefited enormously by eliminating Ukraine as the transit point for Russian natural gas supplies via pipeline from Russia through Ukraine to Europe and ultimately to Germany. So Germany has now, if you like, cut out the middleman, which reduces its costs, increases its likelihood of a secure supply. And right now, the United States is attempting to interfere with all of that. And it, by the way, this is not helping Ukraine either. Certainly, Ukraine knows it is not going to get the German market back again for the transited natural gas, but it must find a way to not isolate itself from Russia, while at the same time attempting to get NATO's military support or the support of the Western umbrella, if you like. But the reality is that Germany has not become closer to Washington as a result of all of this debacle. Quite the contrary, it's become further isolated, and this further fractures NATO and fractures European Union relations with the United States.
Over the weekend, prior to the visit of the chancellor, which was long expected, there were headlines coming out of Europe. They were matched by headlines in the U.S. With U.S. sources, we can believe State Department sources in one instance, repeating and then expanding upon the imminence of combat. At one point, there was a report about how many casualties there'll be, how many refugees there'll be. This added to the assertion by the State Department last week that the Russians were preparing a false flag operation with a video that would show victims under in the Donbass who were attacked by Ukrainian forces. None of this has happened. Was that meant for the benefit of Herr Scholz? Was that meant to make it clear to Germany that they needed the United States to solve this crisis?
The typical stance of the American officials who have been engaged in this operation in the State Department, these are officials who worked with the Obama administration and worked with the Clinton administration. And we've seen them use these identical tactics in the past. It's essentially a blame the victim approach. And literally, they're basically saying now, well, Russia is going to invade Ukraine, even though the Russians firstly denied it and have been silent about this whole thing. They haven't made no threatening remarks. And so it now looks as if the United States, by its blustering and its muscular diplomacy, is driving a resolution of this so that Russia does not invade. So if Russia does not invade Ukraine, then Washington says, see, we sure showed them and they backed down. If Russia does invade, the State Department says, see, we told you this was going to happen, and isn't it good that we were prepared? So it's an information dominance campaign in the classic strategic information dominance warfare. And it's reminiscent of the phony war. And you do this in part to disadvantage and constrain or paralyze your opponent. But partially, it's also an attempt to determine the resolve of your adversary. So basically, we saw this in the phony war in after September 39, when the German government wanted to determine how resolved France and Britain were to defend Poland and to go to war with Germany. So the ideal thing is that you exaggerate this information dominance war with threats, with bluster, with panic and fear, and you see how your adversary reacts. And that's what's happening today. The reality is that Germany has stayed relatively aloof from this State Department generated information dominance campaign, and the Americans are, of course, trying to push Germany into hardening up the Western confrontation, because without Germany, the United States looks fairly hollow in its attempt to build forces in Europe. It's got some U.S. forces in Germany, of course, and is now sending more over. But frankly, having U.S. military forces in Germany or Italy, where the most U.S. forces are at the moment, doesn't really help you in Ukraine. And in any event, the last thing that Washington wants this to lead to is a direct military confrontation between Russian and U.S. forces or NATO forces, because then there's no going back. But I did say on a report on September the 3rd last year that the absolute debacle caused by the U.S. precipitate withdrawal from Afghanistan, the way the U.S. broke its situation in Central Asia, was that this was going to lead very quickly. And as I said, with Washington, Beijing, and New Delhi should all be expected to contemplate major high-risk adventures before the end of 2022. And other powers are going to use this global chaos to chance their own defensive or offensive opportunism to take advantage of the global distraction. So right now, that's what we've got. We've got Washington attempting to recover from its disastrous position with the collapse of the U.S. position in Afghanistan in August. And essentially, what we're seeing is not, if you like, a U.S. war against Russia, but a U.S. information dominance campaign carried out abroad so that the U.S. can, the Biden administration can improve its prospects for the midterm elections in November 2022 in the U.S.
To your understanding, is Berlin aware that these remarks about the imminence of catastrophe in Ukraine are not real? Does Berlin understand an information dominance campaign?
Absolutely. I mean, let's face it, they Germany has, you know, been a party to this kind of phony war information dominance campaign approach for the last 100 years. So this is nothing new, and they're also aware, as my old friend Miles Copeland used to say, this is a former U.S. CIA officer and advisor to Egyptian President Gamal Abdel Nasser. He would often tell me that U.S. foreign policy is just U.S. domestic politics carried out abroad. And so what the Germans are aware of is what is the reality that we've got Washington needing to look muscular in its presidential leadership and its strong approach to any adversaries. You can carry that. You can do that abroad, and you can play all these games seemingly without consequence, and you look strong, and then people forget about the problems at home, and they say, well, you know, President Biden was really tough against the Russians, and he showed them.
So we come to the statement that the President of the United States made in this joint press conference. He said, in response to a question, if Russia invades, that means tanks and troops crossing the border of Ukraine again. Then there will be no longer a Nord Stream 2. We will put an end to it. I promise you, we will be able to do it. Did Herr Scholz know when he heard that the president doesn't intend to put an end to Nord Stream 2, that Germany needs to wait this out and it will have Nord Stream 2 to turn on? Is Germany aware of that?
Well, Germany knows it has to be very careful about how it manages this, because you don't want to push Washington to the point where they are, in order to save face, they have to actually try to disrupt the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. So because stopping the Nord Stream 2 pipeline is not just about putting sanctions on Putin and Russian business and government leaders. It would be about punishing German leaders. And that would be one NATO power punishing another NATO power. And this would be the end of NATO. It would spell the final breakup, if you like, not only of NATO, but of the what's left of the Western alliance between Western Europe and North America. So this is a foolhardy threat to make, and it shows how desperate the Biden White House has become over this issue. It realizes that it's running out of places to go with this phony war that it's created. Right. So it has to escalate the threats. But it puts itself in a position where, if it cannot follow through, it's going to look foolish. And right now, it's trying to avoid looking foolish, trying to avoid looking as though it's been outfoxed and defeated by the time the midterm elections come up in November.
I'm speaking with Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. There's another world leader in motion. That would be Emmanuel Macron, the president of France, in Moscow and now in Kyiv. And when we come back, what does Kyiv make of Macron's visit? What does Macron want in this contest of information dominance? I'm John Battle.